Hi, welcome to Swancast. As most of you know, we at Staines Rugby Club are really keen to make rugby a really safe place to be and to look after our teammates with mental health problems. So we've teamed up with Blokes, a great new platform for raising awareness of men's mental health and for people to be able to talk to each other. Please look them up on any great social media. They will be _Blokes. They're a great organisation. We're really proud to be working with them.
Hi, everybody. Happy New Year. Welcome to this week's Swancast. After last week's Christmas Swancast, talking as Christmas should, all about food, we've decided to reach out this week and talk all about beer. So I'm really happy to be joined by a man that I consider to be a close mate, as well as my cousin. He was best man at my wedding. But he's also owns and runs a brewery. So, Luke Raven, welcome to the Swancast, mate.
Oh, thanks for having me. Hi, Nick, and hello everyone out there. Yeah, really good to be here, especially today.
Cool. So, first job, Luke, we're here to talk about beer. Tell everybody what qualifies you to talk about beer.
Well, like lots of people, I drink a fair amount of beer, have drunk beer for a long time, but that's not enough these days to make beer. I started making beer about 10-12 years ago over in Australia. I've been running bars before then and wanted a change, learned how to make beer, moved back to the UK and moved out to a little town in the Yorkshire Dales called Ilkley, where a little microbrewery had just been set up, just supplying a few pubs, and I joined them, and with the kind of remit of growing them into something a little bit more than that. And here we are, 10 years later, brewed our 13 millionth pint this year. So it's been something quite extraordinary, really. But yeah, like I said, we're up in Yorkshire making beer and shipping it all over the world now.
Obviously world famous Ilkley Brewery, made famous by the legend Jimmy Lowe's, giving you a shout out on now the world famous Swancast.
That was cracking that. I was just saying to you, Nick, just off air, wasn't I, about how as it happened just after that podcast had gone out, our club chairman had popped in to buy some beer from our click and collect service, and I was chatting to him about that, and he had nothing but good words to say. He was really pleased with that.
Yeah, Jimmy's a top bloke. So we're here to talk about rugby. That's what I always talk about. We're here to talk about beer. Beer has a massive place in my heart. Yeah, I don't think you get a beard like mine without drinking real ale. I don't think you're allowed. But what can you tell us about beer itself? What do you know about the history of beer and particularly its Viking origins?
I think judging by the state of your beard since I last saw you, I think and the axe behind you, I think that the Viking origins are probably best left to you. But ultimately, the thing about beer is that it's our national drink, and we often kind of forget it. You know, there's been so much development of other drinks over the years, kind of in the recent history and long ago like that, that the beer's often kind of overlooked. It's just kind of taken for granted, I think. And we should be proud of it. I think one of the problems has been that our heritage has held us back in some ways, because we've got so much rich tradition about beer, going back hundreds and hundreds of years, that there's an element of, well, you can't do this and you can't do that. It has to be like this. Beer has to taste of beer. And you see countries where that's not been the case, that haven't got the heritage, kind of going, well, let's just put a bit of this in and let's try this and experiment. And that's how all things develop and get better, they evolve. And so there's been, I think, for many, many years, you know, the beer industry in the UK was very kind of stuck in that, you know, and it had, and still to a certain degree, you know, a lot of stigma attached to it, you know, whether it's lager louts or real ale and the beardy weirdies. And, you know, it attaches itself to things, you know, really, you know, quite a lot. And then you see other drinks like wine, which has managed to, you know, diversify and change and become so normal and match with different things. You know, it doesn't raise people's eyebrows to say, oh, I'll have this wine with that steak or this wine with fish. But you say something about beer and food matching and people think that you're off your offer. So there's a lot of work to be done still, but ultimately it is our national drink and it's something that we should be massively proud of. You know, it's not just, you know, great, we export some beer and other breweries export beer, but as a country, we export beer as a notion, if you like. You know, it's something that spread around the world because of us. So yeah, it's something that I think is very important to our British culture and society, really. And you know, you have a beer at lunch rather than a glass of wine at lunch, it's definitely better for you, less lower alcohol and so on. And it has got that versatility. So yeah, I think it's just a massively important product, you know, more so than, I don't know, Biro pens or something like that. Of course I'm going to say that, I make beer, but I think it has got a really important place in, yeah, for everyone in the country, really.
That's really cool. So, you know, do you think that desire, you know, guys like yourselves in Ilkley, and, you know, we see small breweries kind of springing up all over the place. Lots of them were there and we just didn't know about them, I guess, for a long time. Is that because people are prepared to drink something different? Do you think things are changing?
For sure. I mean, I think it's lots of kind of factors all coming together, and partly the right time and just kind of partly over time. So I think, for example, the financial crisis back in kind of 2006-07 had a massive knock-on impact on people wanting to know more, wanting to get better value for things, and I don't mean getting a better price and cheaper products. They wanted to know if they're going to spend their hard-earned money, that where it was going, and so who made it became much, much more important, and where it came from became much, much more important, and how it was made. So yeah, so if you were lucky enough to still have a job and you're going to spend that money, you might spend it once instead of twice a week, or twice instead of three times a week, and your experience became more important. So the experiential aspect of socializing and leisure became more important, but also the actual product. And so as people started paying a bit more attention to what they ate or drank, so the quality had to go up. You know, at the time then I was running bars, and we saw very quickly that you just didn't get the second chance that you might have got before. Everything had to be spot on every time because people just were more demanding. And ultimately what that led to was better operations, better, you know, better service, better, you know, more attention to detail. And the same things happened with beer. So take West Yorkshire, where we are, for example. There's more breweries per capita in West Yorkshire than anywhere else in the country. Including London now. And if you take the fact that there's more breweries per capita in England than any other country in the world, that basically means that I'm sat in the epicenter of world brewing. I certainly like to think so anyway. But whilst on the one hand that means that there's, you know, healthy competition, a lot of competition for pub lines, it means that we can't ever rest on our laurels. We've got to be good. We've got to keep on being good. I think making great beer is the prerequisite. It's the entry level now, because you don't get that second choice. There are other people out there doing it well as well. And so if you aren't consistent, or if you just churn out the same thing over and over again, people move on. And you know, that's gonna be a challenge for our industry kind of going forward, is staying relevant. But it's about staying consistent and having that as a base. You can't just make the occasional good beer anymore. Which is how it used to be. And it's about provenance. It's about, yeah, it's telling that story. It's, we're not faceless, you know. I remember a few years ago talking to a brewer from London. We won't name the brewery, and the brewer's a really good friend of mine. And he was showing me pictures of their new brew kit, and he was telling me about how it was so exciting because he could start the brew from before he even got dressed in the morning from home, press a button, and then by the time he got there, and he could then press another button, and it mixed everything in. And it was really quite cool and amazing technology, certainly at the time. And whilst there was a bit of me that 100% had brewery envy, I was like, oh, that's a really sexy bit of kit. That's really nice. So the bit of me was kind of thinking, yeah, but I like the fact that I've got a burn scar here from when I got too close to the mash tun making Ilkley Blonde you know, in 2012. I like the fact that most of my toes are broken from dropping barrels on it. That every bit of our beer, as much as we'll invest in bits of kit to make things better, it's still done by people and, you know, done by hand. And I think that doing that and telling that story are really important factors to key into to people. And I've always felt that, you know, I can, you know, it's my job to talk, wax lyrical about the beer and the business and try and grow it. But that kind of runs through everyone who works with us. And I think that through a lot of breweries, you know, we're not unique in that. And it's a really, really fun, friendly and open industry to be part of. And I think that'll be our strength going forward. You know, I'm sure we'll touch on it perhaps later in the pod, but it's something that's been really reinforced in me during this horrible year we're having, this COVID year, that desire for people to have to look for provenance and quality and consistency.
I think that's right, mate. I mean I love the idea that people are investing in people. So knowing that you've got a scar on your shoulder from making, you know, Ilkley Blonde, the next time somebody picks up a bottle of Ilkley Blonde, there'll be a human element to it. Hmm. Whereas the next time they pick up and I don't want to get into any trouble, but a bottle of London Pride or a can of, I don't know, what have I got downstairs? I've got Old Speckled Hen downstairs. They won't know that, that story.
Yeah, and that's, you know every business as it grows comes to maybe multiple crossroads. But you know, just like Ilkley Brewery did when it was a couple of guys with no brewing background at all, but with an idea, making a bit of beer for their mates in pubs that quite often wasn't that nice. Sometimes it's quite nice, and they worked on it, and they had a business plan and got better at it. And then it came to that point, do we want to grow and keep on going, keep on improving and make it, you know, make it into a solid business? And frankly, at that point, one of the founders didn't really want to do that. You know, what he wanted to do was make a bit of beer for his mates, you know, chew the ear of corn and lean on the bar and talk about making beer with his mates, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. That's what he wanted, and his business partner wanted to cash in on the growing microbrewery boom, you know. There's nothing wrong with that either. And ultimately went their separate ways. And as breweries and as any business grows, you have that point where, okay, well, we've done okay, we can reinvest into kit. Do we buy that new fancy brewery now? Do we do this? Do we, you know, how far does making efficiencies go before you lose that genuine sense of personality? And that's you know, always a fine line. And like I said, you know, one of the, probably the silver lining for me of this whole last year has been having now the opportunity to reach out and talk to our customers, whereas before we've always dealt only with wholesalers or with pubs. So the person buying our pint is buying it from somebody else who bought it from us, and we're relying on that third party, whether publican or wholesaler, to do a good job of telling our story. And that's pretty hard when there's lots of other beers to tell the story of, or know, and staff turn it, all these types of things. And so now that we're our only real avenue for selling beer is through a website and shipping our beer direct to people's doorsteps, whether they're in Staines or whether local in Yorkshire. It's been that feedback and seeing what people are drinking, knowing that they're liking this, that reassurance, that you know, all of those things are really showing us that people do still, and probably more than ever this year, care about where their money's going and what they're eating and drinking.
Yeah, I mean, you know me. Obviously, I'm a people person, and I like that. That's a kind of people care about people. I think that's, if there's a positive to take out of this year, then it is that people care about people, isn't it? And, on that note, what's happened with the business? What's exciting from this year?
Well,
on a business note.
Well, yeah. So I mean, you say that about people business, and that's what people want to see. I mean, our kind of, I don't want to use the word slogan, but the kind of phrase that we use that is powered by beer, but it goes more than that. It's powered by people, it's powered by history, powered by malt, you know, all of those things. And this year for us has really been about being powered by not just the people at the brewery making the beer, and a lot of them have been furloughed this year. We've not had, you know, very much production at all. But it's also been about being powered by the community. You know, we were just about to, in fact, the date of the, we started running events last year at the brewery, and we decided to reach out with other local Yorkshire breweries and organise a massive kind of party and festival. We're expecting about 3,000 or 4,000 people over the course of a weekend for this charity festival. It was a water festival to raise money for water projects in Africa. And so the theme was Yorkshire water. And we thought, well, okay, we've got loads of Yorkshire breweries making beer with Yorkshire water. Our brewery is actually right next door to a Yorkshire water site as well. So they were going to sponsor it. It was, I mean, this massive weekend long event. It was due to be on the 22nd of March, 2020. So we all know what happened that weekend. And obviously we'd realised the way it was going that we had to cancel or postpone that festival. We were hoping for maybe till later on in the year, but well, hopefully we'll be able to do it in 2021. But I think putting the work into that was for me personally was really fun, and it was really encouraging seeing people really get behind the idea of the charity using beer to raise money for charity. And we wanted to really kind of like keep that momentum kind of going and so on with what we could do. And I mean, from a business perspective, obviously that was a big shame. You know, we couldn't run the event, but we had about 800 casks of beer in our warehouse, in our warehouse that weekend, when all the pubs were shut, which is a lot of beer. You know, it's 50,000 pints. You know, it's a huge amount of beer. Which we couldn't sell overnight. So we had to completely adapt. Fortunately, I've been building a web shop part of the website in the kind of as an ongoing thing. It wasn't particularly urgent. It was just something I wanted to have. But up until that point, we'd never sold any beer direct online or anything direct to people. So I managed to get that sorted in the first week up and running, first week of the lockdown. And it just took off. Obviously, no one knew how long it was going to be, did they? How long we were going to be at home? What was happening next? Couldn't get supermarket slots for deliveries. We couldn't go out. All these sorts of things. And I mean, I read somewhere in those first few months that globally alcohol consumption went up about 20%, but in the UK it was 60%, which may well have long term implications, I'm sure. But certainly the short term implications for our business was good. We were lucky enough that we've been dealing with supermarkets now for many years. A lot of breweries, unfortunately, didn't have that option, and it's not a quick thing to turn around. You know, even for us, it still takes about a year to get a change of beer or a new beer listed. But we were already in almost all of the supermarkets already. So, but those sales went through the roof straight away, which was great. And we suddenly had something that we could kind of build on in terms of web sales. So we had our vans. We've got four vans that normally cover a kind of 100-mile radius. We went down to two vans, but they were out every day. Roads were empty, so we could get a lot of drops in. So they were kind of doing 20, 30 drops each, all across Yorkshire, really. And then we started, after a few weeks of kind of finding our feet and how things worked, I mean, we effectively furloughed everyone. There was 18 of us at the brewery. Myself and the other owner stayed on every day. And then there was a couple of other drivers, basically, we kept on, working full time. And between the four of us, we started selling through the beer we had, and then worked out a plan when we kind of started to feel about how long it was going to be lasting. You know, getting the brewing team in to top us up, basically. And when we started shipping nationally, we started using DHL to ship beers nationally, and that's now accounts for about 50% of our web sales are outside the region, and because we do a next day service, it's free delivery over £50, so it's relatively easy to do that in a few cases. So that that really kind of opened a lot of doors for us and let us spread our wings a bit and start using food, going through stock. So that's been great. We've built up a side of the business that when everything reopens, we'll still have, obviously to a lesser degree, but we'll still have that, which would be great. But, I'm not kidding myself that, I was, Christmas week, I was packing boxes. I was from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. 6 days a week, I was in the warehouse, breaking down cases of beer and putting them in mixed cases and shipping them out. And it was hard, but it was good to see all this beer going out. But I had to be real, but that week, the previous year, we'd have sold about 50 grams worth of beer to pubs, which I think we sold one cask of beer to one pub that was in a tier two area for 50 quid, 60 quid. So it's not comparable. As much as we've been really busy and it's been great, this year has taken over. I think we've probably lost about 600 grand worth of sales that we could have expected from pubs not being open this year, which is...
Wow, that's...
It's a lot, but obviously we're here, having got made it to the end of 2020, and I'm pretty bullish considering the state of affairs we find ourselves in with this new variant and ever changing. The one thing we can be certain of is uncertainty. Brexit thrown into that for us, we export all across Europe, so there's a lot of challenges ahead. But the fact that we've come through with this most challenging year, and we're down, of course, on last year, but we're not down by as much as we could have been. I think the industry average is about 30% down on last year, and we're only about 15% down, which I'm really, really proud of. Proud of achieving. We've worked really hard. Those of us who've been kind of left standing. To make sure that there are jobs for the other guys who have been furloughed. And I'm confident that we've done that now, that we've come through. I've kind of written off pubs till Easter and did so quite a long time ago, really, and figured that if there are any little gaps in between tiers, then great, we'll have some beer ready and we'll sell it to them. But otherwise, we're not going to produce any extra beer and sit on extra stock. But we've got a few more. I feel like we've got a few more strings to our bow now. We've proved that we're quite agile, and we're in a pretty good position. So I'm looking forward to. I think that there's going to be next year a real demand and appetite for events and for going out drinking and socialising and seeing people again. When it's safe to do so, I think. Of course, there's going to be financial worries for people, and there's going to be a lot of unemployment and so on. But I kind of feel that in the main, though. That people are still going to want to go out and socialise. I dropped off on my last thing I did today was all the vans had gone home. But there's a pub that's we're in Yorkshire. We're in tier three. Kind of have been really throughout this, certainly since the pubs reopened in July. They've been under restrictions, but there's a pub in our town that is doing takeaway, and they've been really, really busy. There's a huge demand for it, evidently. And I took up four kegs of beer today on my way home, having dropped them off over the weekend, even when we weren't open, because I knew that they'd run out and I needed some. And I was dropping it off on the street outside, and I asked the guy who runs the bar, and I said, "Do you feel that there's an announcement coming? Do you think we might be locked down? Do you feel that people are drinking because it could be the last time they drink for a while?" And before he could answer, about three separate people in the queue turned their heads and all went, "Yes, that's exactly why we're stood here." And there is that, we've all lost things that we liked doing and had to cut back on stuff at various points during the year. And there is that sense of we don't know how long it'll last. So I'll enjoy it while I can, or I'll enjoy this, or I will have that nice bit of food that you were talking last week. I will have that because. Do you know why it's been tough and I deserve it and I will have that extra thing or that extra beer in this case. And so I think that will hopefully see us through into next year and we're kind of looking forward to that, to helping people with that, fill that need.
Mate, I think that's really cool. I love the analogy about another another string to your bow and being agile, which is kind of a rugby thing. And I always encourage people to be agile. It's never something I've been. So, I really love that. I think there's lots of people that are, once all the nonsense is done with, and for those of you that don't know, Luke and I are recording this on Tuesday evening, just before the announcement on Wednesday. So we don't yet know where everybody's going to sit when you listen to this on Friday morning. So anything could happen. don't joke about it, mate. Don't joke about it. It'll be tier 5 tomorrow night, tier 6 by Thursday night, and God knows where we'll be after that. I love the idea that once it's done, everybody's going to be in a much stronger place. With, you know, you'll have web sales and pub sales and export opportunities, and suddenly you'll find yourself up to your neck in stuff that you weren't expecting to be at 18 months ago. And I think that's really cool. That's a real positive story to come out of that.
I think the way we all consume things is going to be different, you know, whether it's, and I think, you know, permanently, ultimately, you know, and whether that's drink or food or sport, you know, the way we go out and what we prioritize as a, I said that, you know, the royal way is, it's going to be different, and businesses and sporting clubs and all sorts of organisations that have to adapt to that and go, okay, well, what do people want? You know, people are going to go and shop more, but we're getting deliveries, aren't we, all the time at home, so we're used to that. So we're perhaps going to do that a bit more often as well. Oh, have I frozen? You froze.
You frozen, mate. Are you still there? Oh, so listeners, this is the first time this has happened. I don't really know what to do now. Luke, can you hear me? Okay, so I'm going to cut the cord with Luke, and we're going to see if we can link up again straight away. So let's see what happens.
Unfortunately, we lost Luke at this point due to his internet dropping out. I do genuinely believe it wasn't my fault. I would love to get him back on. I think he and I need to talk about links with beer and rugby, and also his links with his local rugby club, which where his boys play. So watch this space. We will try and get him back on next week's podcast. I'm hoping to speak to the man with his finger on the big red button. So look out for that chat. Catch you all soon. Have a lovely new year. See you all soon.